Good afternoon. My name is Andrea, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the third quarter earnings call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. I would like to now turn the call over to Mr. Richard Heron. You may begin, sir.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's third quarter 2011 earnings conference call. With me on the call today is FirstPac Trust Bancorp's President and Chief Executive Officer, Gregory Mitchell. Also on this call and available to answer questions later is our CFO, Marito Domingo. Today's conference call is being recorded for replay via phone, and copy of the recording will be available later on the company's investor relations website. Before I turn it over to Greg, I want to remind everyone that, as always, elements of this presentation are forward-looking and are based on our best view of the world and our businesses as we see them today. Those elements can change as the world changes. Please interpret them in that light. The forward-looking statements in today's 8-K filing also apply to our comments today. That document is available on our FirstPacTrustBancorp.com investor relations website, as are other 8-Ks filed regarding investor presentation material and other matters. A PDF file of the investor presentation slideshow for this earnings conference call can be found on the company's investor relations website under the link entitled News and Market Data. Then click on either the Presentations or Investor Conference Calls link. We will have time for Q&A at the end of this presentation. And now I'll turn it over to our President and CEO, Greg Mitchell.
Hey, thank you, Richard, and thank you for all the work that you and your people have done this last quarter. And really, before jumping into the call, I want to give a tip of the hat to really the entire management team and staff at PacTrust, who have, in my opinion, done a phenomenal job achieving a number of important milestones during this past quarter. I think notably, the bank made very substantial progress in continuing to clean up asset quality issues, as you'll see in a moment, related to our non-performing asset issues and delinquency issues, and really correcting a lot of problems that will lead us into a brighter future. At the same time, our loan production office really began to gain traction in the production of very high-quality commercial real estate and single-family residential loans at yields that really demonstrate the value proposition that we bring to the people of Southern California. Importantly, also, our retail deposit staff has really stepped up their efforts from a sales and service perspective, working on bringing in high-quality core deposits and driving down the bank's cost of funds. And as importantly, our securities and treasury folks have been working to reduce credit risk within our securities portfolio, reduce interest rate risk, and bring forth a securities portfolio that we can all feel very proud of in this very uncertain economic environment that we're working through. In addition, and as a sort of a tip of the hat to the entire staff, much of this was done while we began to show improvement in our efficiency ratio by growing into our skin. So real high-level achievements for the quarter were as a result of our loan teams, production efforts, and our deposit teams' efforts to lower costs and improve the mix, we showed a 5-basis-point expansion in our net interest margin, and our collections team reported very substantial reductions in total delinquencies, non-performing loans, and generally non-performing assets. So I think we're very, very well positioned for a strong fourth quarter and a strong 2012. I'm going to jump through just a few key highlights of the quarter from my perspective, and then want to respond to a lot of your questions and dig into the greater detail in a more of a Q&A format as opposed to me simply reading off the release. That said, from an earnings perspective, the company did show about a $500,000 expansion in our core earnings as a result of the more favorable asset mix and liability mix. The net income available to common shareholders was roughly 4 cents a quarter. While some of you might have been disappointed with that level, we found it attractive, particularly given the things that we were able to do this quarter to resolve some legacy assets and resolve some charges related to our M&A activities and our change of control benefits from prior employees. So I saw from an earnings perspective, big picture, expansion in core earnings, expansion in the margin, and those are things that lead in my judgment to a brighter future tomorrow. Jumping into a few key highlights that I think are notable from a non-performing asset perspective, non-performing loans declined by about 41% to now just 1.19% of loans. Interestingly, as you look into the data, we're approaching levels at the bank level where non-performing loans are less than 90 basis points. That presents PacTrust at a level that is far superior to most peers in California. And then from a forward-looking perspective, we see those levels of delinquencies continuing to decline in subsequent quarters. And that helps us immensely in our efforts to acquire other companies and maintain very strong relations with our regulators. The pre-tax, pre-provision income, which is really a pre-pre as adjusted for OREO, rose by that $500,000 to roughly $3.3 million for the quarter versus $2.8 million in the prior quarter. And again, that increase was largely attributable to the improved asset mix, growth in assets, and favorable funding on the liability side of the balance sheet. Jumping into loans, again, solid progress this quarter. Linked quarters, 115% increase in production. Again, that portfolio came in with a blended yield of about 514 basis points. If you think about the math, 514 on the loan side and a funding cost sub 70 basis points helps us advance towards our goal of achieving a 400 basis point net interest margin on a steady state basis. So very pleased with what's happened there, and also very pleased with the direction that we're going in Q4, 2011, and beyond. On the deposit side, again, tip of the hat to the team there. You can see that the funding costs dropped to 71 basis points, continue to make very steady progress in improving the mix of liabilities. Excited to have reported continued progress in the La Jolla office, significant progress on our recently opened San Marcos branch, which has gone over $10 million in deposits, and we recently opened the Century City office a couple weeks ago, and I have very high hopes for that location. Fulfilling the promise of growth, we told you at the beginning of this year that we expected to open four offices. We will. The fourth office will open in the city of Santa Monica in January of 2012. Regrettably, that opening was delayed as a result of some politics within the city and challenges in getting some of the permits for work. But I think the people of Santa Monica will be very pleased with the outcome in that particular office. We also work to identify the first location to open in 2012, which we will announce shortly, and we're working on three additional locations for retail organic expansion in 2012. Retail production team really doing a great job, being very aggressive from a sales perspective. Many of you may have seen our efforts for Change Bank Day or Boot Your Bank Day. Your team was out with sandwich boards and out in the streets encouraging people to change banks. We got a fair amount of press for that here on the West Coast, and showed in some of our branches a 500 or 600% daily increase in the volume of new checking accounts during this campaign. So we're out there aggressively positioning PacTrust to get the business, and we think the relationships that we'll be bringing into the bank on a pro forma basis will really enhance earnings. So again, congratulations to our retail banking team for their great efforts. Non-interest income increased marginally as we began to have greater discipline on opposing fees within the organization. We also took gains on the sale of securities as part of this repositioning effort. Very pleased with the success that our treasury team has had in deploying assets into higher yielding securities and restructuring the portfolio to a level that is I think we can all sleep well on each night. Very short durations, very highly rated, low to no risk of downgrades or any potential OTTI impairment in the long term. We've really positioned the securities portfolio of PacTrust to move away from being a source of yield, which happened in prior periods with a level of credit risk, to a true source of liquidity, which will benefit the company and its shareholders long term. Our non-interest expense increased by $1.7 million, largely due to about $1.3 million in OREO charges. And I'll provide you some specific detail on how that was spent in a moment and the favorable results of those efforts. We also had a number of non-recurring transaction expenses related to M&A activities. We paid for fairness opinions on previously announced transactions, some legal expenses, and other items. We also had some further cleanup efforts as it related to the payment of change of control on some of the former officers of Pacific Trust Bank who had protection. As many of you know, we've announced a couple times that we had an obligation, a remaining obligation of about $1.6 million for change control payments. The payment made here came from that allocation. Credit quality, again, major tip of the hat to our team for increasing the collection effort and really moving legacy assets through the pipeline. Yeah, we've taken total delinquencies at the bank level down to about $17 million, which is quite remarkable for an institution of this size. In the quarter, we've shown continued progress in reducing the levels of 90-day delinquencies. So we expect in the fourth quarter these trends to look even better. And I'm very, very pleased with the direction of risk and the quality of our collection efforts. That has resulted in these efforts have resulted in a material increase in OREO, both at the holding company level and bank level. We have very specific plans in place to address the resolution of those assets and collection in a timely manner. For those who have been following PAC Trust for an extended period of time, you may recall that we had a large asset located in Mammoth, which was a luxury timeshare. This is an asset that the bank had taken perpetual losses on for many years. It had been written down to about 20% of its original loan balance, and that asset cleared earlier this quarter. So that resulted in a $2-plus million reduction in our OREO in the fourth quarter, and that reduction was completed at a slight gain to the organization. And by slight, I mean slight. So you should not anticipate large recoveries from OREO in Q4 as related to that asset. But we think now that we've moved these classified assets through the pipeline, we have very clear plans to clear the next step, and we see continued reduction in the total level of non-performing assets. And obviously that will improve future earnings as we redeploy the proceeds of those asset sales into new loans generated by Chang Liu and our loan production team. So the OREO, I think we've covered that pretty fully. And again, I feel pretty confident in where we're going. At the holding company, it really consists of five assets. One of those has since cleared. Two of the others we have approaching escrows. So we see significant progress there. The remaining REOs are really smaller homes located at the bank. And we have active sales efforts for all of those assets. So capital, obviously a very strong story here. Holding company's got about 21% Tier 1 equity. Tangible common equity continues to remain strong, giving the company sufficient capacity to meet its obligations while also covering expected outlays related to the acquisition of Beach Business Bank and Gateway Business Bank. So very happy with what is happening there. And then just giving you an update on other key items. As it relates to the proposed acquisition of Gateway Business Bank, we remain on course for a closure of that, a financial close of Gateway in Q4 of 2011, and we're very excited to bring that in. We've also been very pleased with the progress that's been made by Mission Hills Mortgage Bankers and the staff at Gateway Business Bank in resolving legacy assets at Gateway and continue to increase production out of Mission Hills team while further strengthening their compliance culture. So we think that's going to be a great addition to the PAC Trust family, and we're anxiously looking forward to consummating that merger later this year. On the Beach transaction, a special thank you to our finance team for quickly getting out an S3 for the SBLF and an S4 for the Beach transaction. We remain on track for closure of that transaction in Q1 of 2012. We're very pleased with the progress that Beach has continued to make in running its business in a very profitable and successful way, and we would encourage many of you to read Beach's press release when that comes to the market. We are in active discussion with the Federal Reserve. They're aware of our plans and are supportive. And then, again, on track to close in Q1. Liquidity, very strong. This institution is a result of the restructuring that we've done from a securities portfolio perspective, and our cash positions give us the ability to meet all of our obligations, both liquidity in the context of running the bank and liquidity of the holding company in the context of meeting its obligations to the subsidiary bank and to these other institutions. So very happy with how we're looking there. And then from a regulatory perspective, we've had the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency examining the bank. That process is nearly complete, and we were certainly delighted to have them, seriously delighted to have them here at the bank for a number of weeks. There's some important non-GAAP financial information in our disclosures this month, so I'd encourage you to take a look at that. It helps you to reconcile how we're looking at this pre-pre number and how we're looking at core income numbers as an institution. It's a little unusual relative to what we've purported in the past, but we're trying to give analysts and interested shareholders and participants sort of a better understanding of the levers and the earnings engines that exist here at Pacific Trust Bank. So if I step back and look at the full story for the quarter, I see expanding net interest margin, I see continued reduction in the cost of funds, I see improvement in our organic loan production, I see our management team and staff working hard to successfully integrate a couple of M&A transactions, and the life force of Pacific Trust Bank really taking taking hold. So I'm very excited about where we stand today and very excited about the future that stands before us. So with that, operator, I'd like to pause and open the call to questions.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. And your first question comes from the line of Bruce Rowe with Robert W. Baird.
Bryce, how you doing? Bryce?
Hold one moment, sir.
You could kind of speak to...
Hey, Bryce, we didn't... You just now came on. If you could sort of restate...
Okay, sorry. I'll pick up the handset here. So if you could kind of cover the OREO topic a little bit more. Obviously, you've had some inflows there and done a good job in pushing loans through to that level. What is the outlook for working through those OREO assets, and then what does the kind of the capacity for further OREO increases look like? I would assume, based on the non-performing loan information you give, that there's that you feel like you've pretty well cleared up what's in the loan portfolio now.
Yeah, we do, and this is one. And I appreciate the question, Bryce. One of the reasons why we're looking forward to sort of continued reductions in NPAs in Q4 is one of our persistent long-term 90-day assets cured this last quarter. Which was a good indication of somebody becoming more confident in the value of their house and choosing to bring their mortgage current and sort of stay with the asset. The remaining 90-day delinquencies, we think about $3 million of that number will go into OREO. On the other side of that, we believe, and again, lots of things happen in the market, so this could change, but we believe for the quarter that we'll see somewhere between $6 and $8 million of OREO clearing out, so that you'd have a net reduction of anywhere from $3 to $5 million, which represents about 25% of the total book. And that we would expect, since many of these assets just came into the OREO cycle and we're seeing sort of a total sales effort of 90 plus days, you'd see more coming out in Q1, and I think quite frankly a fair amount of it would come in Q1. There's probably a couple of assets in that OREO bucket, particularly those that are held at the holding company, where we may choose to hold on to for a longer period of time, given the extreme softness in that space. since the bank has plenty of liquidity and capacity to hold, and our ratios are attractive, we think the shareholders' interests are better served by Bancorp holding some of those assets for a period of time and then, again, selling them once values stabilize. And as we sort of think about that, we look at forecasts for stabilization of values in California from a housing perspective, and that really has an impact on land. And two of the assets of the holding company are land-related assets that will benefit, we think, somewhat significantly from improvements in the market. Is that a response to your question, Bryce?
That is, and I have one other, if you don't mind.
No problem.
Wanted just to get you mentioned the loan production in the quarter. Wanted to get a feel for what the mix of that loan production, and then where you are in terms of getting to the smaller dividend for the SBLS.
Yeah, we're continuing to sort of step up the SBLF sales effort. And I think what we've shared in our investor day and others is we really want to focus a lot on sort of owner-occupied commercial real estate and loans to select small businesses throughout Southern California. Our hope is to have filled that bucket on SBLF loans by the end of the second quarter of 2012. And as you may know, there's a lag in the way Treasury reflects the dividend. So you should see a reduction in the dividend at Q1, further reduction and probably significant reduction at the end of Q2, and then I think the dividend rate would probably approach the 1% level at the end of Q3 12. As it relates to the mix of production, our commercial real estate group has been the most active, and that's really helped from a yield perspective. They are on target to meet or exceed their $100 million production goal for 2012. The single family group has lagged a bit, and we're hoping to sort of ramp that up in Q4 so that we hit our aggregate production goals for 2011. Is that a response to your question, Bryce?
It is, Greg. Thank you. Appreciate it.
And your next question comes from the line of Ed Timmons with Roth Capital.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Ed.
Just a couple questions. Actually, building on what Bryce was just asking, on the loan growth, can you give us an idea of what the pipeline, how the pipeline is today versus maybe June 30th, and just maybe some idea of the percentage you closed in this quarter?
Yeah, the pipeline is significant. I think one of the things we shared at the Investor Day, and I'd encourage interested parties to take a look at this, through August, we had looked at about $850 million in loans and had gotten to a point of term sheets or contractual terms on about $60 million. We're expecting additional production in the fourth quarter, of somewhere between $40 and $45 million. So you've seen sort of $55 to $60 million for the first three quarters. Sequentially, most of it came in the second quarter. You'll see, again, a higher level of gross production in the fourth quarter. Is that responsive, Ed, to what you're looking for?
Yeah, thank you. And then on OREO, an idea. With the valuation adjustments in the second quarter, was that the luxury timeshare or some of the land? Could you maybe go through which properties were appraised or where those marks came from?
Yeah, that's a good question. Two things. I want to cover the ALLL. It's not something you asked, but give you a sense of process. Our ALLL we consider to be adequate as an organization. We've elected on all new commercial production to provision for that new production at about 150 basis points. So part of why you saw that increase in the ALLL for Q3 was because we are producing loans. So in subsequent quarters, you'll see continued provisioning to reflect the growth in our loan portfolio, which I think you'd all agree is prudent. I think another thing that's important on the ALLL is while it increased slightly linked quarters, the level of coverage on non-performing loans and non-performing assets rose sharply. So at the bank level and at the holding company level, our absolute coverage levels are particularly strong. As it relates to the OREO charge, some of it was paying property tax, homeowners fees on items and assets that we already knew. You know, we had a third quarter tax payments for a number of those assets. We also had another one of our land loans that we chose to take an $800,000 charge off on. This was an asset that was earlier under contract from a couple of different parties at a price that was substantially greater than our carrying value. Those deals fell apart. When those fell apart, we secured a new appraisal. That appraisal came in at a level lower than our book value and materially lower than the offers that existed in the market. So we've written it down to that new appraised value. Is that responsive to your question, Ed?
Yeah, that was good. And then one just last quick one, if I could. The professional fees related to the acquisitions, I think it was $475,000. How much of that, or how much of the M&A cost that you don't include in core is non-recurring, assuming you're going to do two or three deals a year?
Yeah, that's a good question. Just to give you a sense of how we account for that, when we complete a transaction, there's typically a fairness opinion issued, and the fairness opinion fees have to be paid at the quarter in which they are billed to us. We also incur a portion of the legal expenses and our third-party due diligence expenses that were performed. So to the extent that we are sort of serially acquiring companies and serially completing due diligence on companies, you can expect a level of transaction expenses as part of the business. I don't think there'll be $475,000 a quarter, but I think it's not unreasonable to assume $100,000, $150,000 a quarter in sort of due diligence and analytical costs. If you're looking at sort of what to model on a pro forma basis, it's also important as you think about that to know that when we announce these transactions, we model for and assume a level of transaction expense that is assumed to sort of come out of the deal value and the pro forma EPS accretion. So to the extent that we've previously expensed that in prior periods, it would have the effect of increasing EPS accretion or reducing tangible book value dilution in subsequent periods.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
Your next question comes from the line of Kevin Reynolds with Wunderlich Securities.
How you doing, Greg?
Good morning, Kevin. I met with one of your brethren earlier this morning.
Interesting. Let me ask you a couple of questions if I can. On loan originations, glad to see that there was a little bit of a turn there on a net basis, and you talked about your pipeline. We know you've got a pretty compelling story for share movement, but how much, if at all, are you seeing any sort of more broad-based kind of market growth out there, or has that not materialized yet?
Market growth in what, Kevin?
Oh, just in your loan portfolio.
Yeah, it's growing. And I think growing growing pretty significantly. Just to give you a sense of color again, we think on the 100 to 100 plus million in loans that we'll produce in 11, we will have looked at over $1 billion in applications. So we're seeing increasing levels of activity and increasing opportunities, and I think grabbing our share of that. Is that responsive to your question, or did I sort of totally miss it?
No, I think that's fair. And I guess to follow up on that, I mean, have you seen with all the volatility in the stock market recently and all the fears about Europe and contagion effects, has there been any noticeable change on the part of the customers that you're seeing right now in your pipeline? Are they continuing to sort of grind through the economic environment, or are they starting to get a little nervous themselves and slow down?
Well, I think our commercial clients remain nervous and are sort of concerned about ongoing spending, building inventory, and growing their business. On the investor client for our commercial real estate portfolio. I think they're largely focusing on the fact that 88 out of every 100 people are still employed here in California. We're still the eighth largest economy in the world, and that there is still, a reasonable level of activity. I think, quite frankly, some of our commercial borrowers are benefiting from the level of fear and uncertainty in the market by buying assets from people who are more concerned and more pessimistic, and they're able to buy those assets at pretty attractive prices. We are obviously mindful of instability in the market, and we are underwriting to 8 cap rates with accounting for a fair amount of potential stress in the cash flows of the individual borrowers. So while we're planning for a normal to pessimistic case, we're underwriting for a pretty severe case, which should protect us in any sort of unforeseen downside, and obviously give us some good benefits if things that grow the way we expect them to.
Okay.
Is that responsive, Kevin?
Yes, thank you. And then one question on the outlook for M&A. You've got two in the pipeline right now that look like they're progressing according to plan. Have you noticed any change on the part of the sellers out there that you might think of as potential targets? Are they becoming more or less receptive in this environment to kind of having those discussions, particularly given the creativity with which you've structured the most recent two deals?
Yeah, I think I think the market is becoming more realistic. There's certainly a large number of institutions that are still in denial, and I think they will remain in denial for a period of time. As I've shared with some, those motivations come from insecurities and fears and a lot of things that have nothing to do with economics. That said, there are an increasing number of smart boards who understand what's going on and are placing more pressures on their management teams to show that they can generate strong returns for their shareholders and demonstrate a defensible position in the market. So boards are getting increasingly involved, and as importantly, regulatory agencies continue to stay involved with some of these smaller institutions, and we're seeing I'm encouraged by what I'm seeing from a value perspective.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Good quarter.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Andrew Wheelish with Sander O'Neill.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Hi. Just one question that hasn't been asked yet. You mentioned that your single-family residential, it's lagged a little bit. Why do you suppose that is?
I think the market's gotten a little frothy from a rate perspective. Some of the larger institutions have been out with long-term mortgage rates or long terms with rates that, in our judgment, don't make sense. Since we're a portfolio lender, we're not terribly interested in doing 7-year hybrids at 3%. It's hard to hit our margin goals and cover our costs at those levels. So we're being a little more selective in our product offering, and that's competition's high, so that's caused us to have lower levels of volume. Does that make sense, Andrew?
Absolutely. Thank you. That's my only question.
And your next question comes from the line of Don Worthington with Raymond James.
Good morning, Don.
Hey, good morning, Greg Marito. A couple things. One on the securities gains, a little more color in terms of, the dollar volume that was sold leading to that gain.
Yeah, there was about $40 million of securities sold. We had built up the portfolio, and towards the end, saw market prices sort of in our favor. The opportunity to unload some of the re-remix, some securities that may be embellished in the future at a gain, so we took the opportunity. We've come right back and bought into the market again, with similar yields as we had mentioned in the investor day. So we continue to invest at those levels, and the portfolio should be by year end or shortly thereafter back up over the $100 million threshold.
Okay. Now, would you expect any more gain on sale going forward?
Not at the moment, no. No, and I know that question was asked, but at that time there really wasn't a plan other than, the winds kind of, allowed us to do it, and, I was able to replace much of the yields at the same rate, so.
Okay. Yeah, I think there can be a perception out there that we were sort of trying to game it through gain on sale of securities, and what we're really trying to do is clean up the securities portfolio. Those of you who are dealing with OCC regulated banks or FDIC regulated banks know that there's an increased level of scrutiny of securities portfolio and a great desire to have your securities portfolio as really very liquid, very high quality, and not subject to significant price volatility in a stressed market. So, we saw the opportunity to enhance the liquidity elements and enhance the credit elements without significantly diminishing the NIM, as Marito's been able to redeploy those into other securities that are attractive to the bank and attractive to our regulator.
Okay, great. And then in terms of the reduction in the non-performing loans, you've touched on things like shifts to REO and the charge-off numbers reported. Did you have anything go back to current status, or was the rest of the change primarily payoffs?
Yeah. No, we've had a fair number of loans that have cured. Candidly, one of the things that we did as an organization previously, as a community bank, were sort of allowing people to remain delinquent for an extended period of time, which is good in the context of sort of pure community banking, where you're really sort of bending over backwards to help your client. But as a public company and a highly regulated company, we felt it appropriate to have some more discipline. So we encouraged a number of these chronic delinquents to bring those loans current, and lo and behold, many of them have. So it hasn't all migrated to OREO. And as I mentioned earlier, Don, already this quarter, one of those chronic 90-day delinquents, representing about $1.2 million, came current, and obviously we benefited from reversal of some previously non-accrual that'll help us a little bit in the fourth quarter. Not a material number, but it's indicative of what's going on. And we think that to the extent that housing prices in San Diego continue to stabilize and people realize that it is in their best interest to stay with it, those numbers will continue to improve.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Gary Tanner with D.A. Davidson.
Morning, Gary.
Morning. Thanks for taking my call. I was hoping you can actually go back over, Greg, those the productivity and pipeline numbers you had mentioned earlier.
Yeah, and I'd also direct your attention to the stuff that's on our website for the Investor Day, because we've got a lot of really great detail in there. But for the year, our forecast out of our commercial real estate group was $100 million in production, just that group, excluding residential. They'll hit or exceed that. Through August, and I'm coming up with sort of general numbers, they had in the baked in roughly $60 million of loans that would close, some of which closed earlier in the third quarter, some of which closed in September. And to get those nuggets, they kissed $842 million of frogs. So the throughput on loans reviewed is about 10%. We think that as the market becomes more accustomed to our underwriting criteria and what we'll look at, the throughput on what we look at versus fund should increase, not because we're lowering our underwriting standards, but because the market is becoming more sensitive to what works for PAC Trust. Is that helpful, Gary?
Yeah, that sure is. And then just a kind of a bookkeeping question. The TCE ratio you had as stink flat at 18.2%.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to make sure that I'm not missing something. Your tangible common equity was essentially unchanged, right, ex the SPLF funds?
No, SPLF is not included in tangible common equity.
Right.
Exactly.
So that the delta between tangible common equity and Tier 1 equity is that SPLF of $32 million.
Yeah. We don't show
all right. So if your tangible common equity was essentially unchanged sequentially?
That's correct. And it remained unchanged. I think we show that.
Right. And your assets, your tangible assets increased to, what, about almost $930 million? I don't see how that ratio was squat.
I hear your question.
Okay. We'll check that.
Let's take a look at that. We'll get back to you.
Okay. Because I was getting somewhere around 17.2. I just wanted to make sure I was not missing something in that calculation. Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Brett Ballone with Big Partners.
Good morning, Brett.
Good morning. Wanted to ask, in regard to your loan production projections, do you guys expect you'll be adding lenders or lending teams in the near term, either commercial or resi-oriented?
We do. That's a great question. I think we've added one additional lender. We're now down to three full-time producers. You'll probably see two more coming on here before too long. We'll also be picking up some production team out of Gateway that has historically been somewhat constrained as a result of Gateway's regulatory issues. We expect commercial lenders to produce somewhere north of $50 million a year in production. So as we model this, you know, it's sort of a fixed cost, variable cost component and production component as it relates to hiring new bodies. It takes a little bit of time for the new employee to build their pipeline and get deals closed, so there is a lag. But the model from a production perspective is sort of proving true. I think we're also seeing some very interesting opportunities now from a purchased asset perspective that we thought we'd see earlier in 2011, as some of our competitors are taking more aggressive steps towards reducing their concentration risks and seeing a little more stability in the market. So we're seeing some opportunities to pick things up at pretty attractive prices. So our production goals organically, which is where we're focusing, I think we're very much on target, and we think those can be supplemented from some purchased asset channels at levels that give us good margin expansion. Is that responsive, Brett?
Yeah, that was good. Thanks, Greg. Then one quick question that's sort of on the change of control expense. Is that now over, or are we going to see that again in the fourth quarter?
Well, I'm hoping that the remaining employees that are with us and still have that benefit stay with us. I'm not aware of anybody being preparing to retire. That portion that came out in Q3 related to Jim Sheehy, who's our longtime chief secretary and former sort of treasurer, financial advisor, marketing guy. Jim just did a number of things for the organization. A great guy. And he was a beneficiary of that change control. The prior period went to Hans Gahn, the bank's former president and CEO. We still have at least three employees that are covered by those change control benefits. And again, I'm not aware of any of them leaving in the near term.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
And again, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. Your final question comes from the line of Nathan Reese with Stern Agee.
Good morning, Nathan.
Hi, guys. I was wondering if you could tell me the type of securities that were bought and sold during the quarter.
Types of securities that were bought and sold in the quarter?
Most of what we sold were private label mortgage-backed securities.
Okay.
We bought back some private label mortgage-backed securities, but we've also purchased Fannie Credit Ginnies and some munis as well. So we are diversifying the portfolio, and that's really the main goal of that was the, part of the goal of the reset was to allow us to diversify the portfolio into other types of securities away from private label mortgage-backed securities.
Okay, great. And can you give us an idea on the average yield and rate term on those securities?
Yeah, I mean, we from a duration perspective, we're under 2 years.
Okay.
You know, the yields will range between 2 and 3%, a few times higher than that. But, you know, we do adhere to the fact that the Fed is looking to hold rates down for the next couple of years, so we're trying to stay invested in the 2 to 3% yield range to that time. So our investments are sort of geared towards that. We are extending a little bit with the munis, for example, but, you know, eventually, you know, this portfolio will sort of have a, you know, a three, four-year average life kind of rolling through it like most other institutions. But given the fact that we're beginning to invest in a low-rate environment, you know, we've been very careful at what we invest in.
Okay, that's great color. Thanks. And on the ORE yield costs, could you give us an idea of what rate you expect going forward on the expense line for those in the next couple quarters?
Well, I think that the forecast is still for a little bit of pricing pressure. So, you know, you will see some charges coming through. It's hard to estimate. But one could actually one place to look in the investor day we presented our portfolio based on LTV and you could from that standpoint tell how much price risk we have on loans where we have over 100 LTV and for the most part what we have been seeing is you know when we taking an REO is, you know, we are able to sell that REO at 91 cents of the dollar, and that's been pretty consistent. So it's really steady as you go. However, you know, as time moves and something over 100 LTV does go delinquent, you know, there's obviously a slight hit to that, and that's what you're seeing.
Yeah, Nathan, I'd encourage you to look at that deck for the Investor Day. Because we provided some very specific analysis on what the capital at risk might be for the organization, looking at loans with loan to values above 90. I think one of the things that you'll be delighted to see is that those loans at risk, substantially all of them are performing, and they're held by borrowers with very high FICO scores. So the probability of default is low. Nonetheless, yeah, things can happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, we've laid out, I think, pretty clearly what the capital at risk might be from that particular segment. And I think as it relates to the OREO, as that continues to clear, we don't know what the ultimate net proceeds are. In some cases, there's been a wide divergence between appraised value and what it takes to clear. In other cases, you know, we've cleared at gains against our net carrying price. You know, we're really not going to know until we're through it all. But you know, we think our process is pretty well considered and certainly consistent with GAAP.
Okay, great guys. Thanks for the caller.
Your next question comes from the line of Ed Simmons with Roth Capital.
Hey, guys, just a quick follow-up, switching gears a little bit on the funding side here. Deposit prices, you've done a great job of lowering them the last few quarters, especially on the CD side. Wondering if you could talk about the efforts you made maybe late third quarter and so far into fourth quarter and the likelihood we see CD costs coming down even further. And then, you know, just as a follow-up to that, a lot of the growth we've seen is also in CDs. Maybe you could talk about the new branches and what kind of growth, what products you're seeing from the new branches.
Yeah, I think the new branches, if you look at their funding costs, and again, I think we included this in the Investor Day material, so I draw your attention to that. They're doing a good job picking up some CDs, but also a lot of money market accounts and core checking accounts. I think, for example, that we highlighted that La Jolla has a funding cost of about 74 basis points. So even though it's a new branch with nearly $30 million in deposits in it, yeah, the funding cost is attractive. San Marcos has a higher funding cost as it had a promotional CD and money market account, but those money market accounts, which is where a lot of the funds are going into, are specialized and they reprice. So as it relates to the San Marcos bucket, you'll see that coming off down substantially in Q4. We're also seeing further opportunities to lengthen some of our maturities on the institutional side. So we're going out with some 3- and 5-year buckets with institutional clients at rates in the ones, low ones to mid ones. While that has the effect of increasing our funding costs, we think long term it provides a great benefit to the organization. And then on the other side, and that tends to help match fund some of our loan growth. But on the other side of the spectrum, yeah, we're seeing further opportunities to take institutional CDs from the state of California in the range of 25 to 30 basis points. So if you look at it on a blended basis, you're still staying within the cost of funds framework that PacTrust is showing today. Is that responsive, Ed?
Yeah, so, I mean, do you think you'll have, should we expect to see further reductions in the cost of deposits going forward?
Yeah, against,
or are you pretty much at the,
yeah, against,
the bottom here?
No, against where you saw, against the third quarter numbers, you'll see further reductions in the cost of funds. I think,
okay.
There'll come a point, just from a mathematical perspective, you can never go below zero, and there's a point of intolerance on the part of the depositors. We're not there yet, so I think you'll see further reductions, but I don't think you'll see the level of shrinkage, the rate of shrinkage, in 2012, because there comes a point where customers have to sort of feed their children and feed themselves. You can't go to zero.
Okay. Thanks for taking my follow-up.
Thank you.
There are no further questions. I would like to now turn the call back over to Mr. Herron.
Just a summary again, a tremendous amount of work has gone on at Pacific Trust over the last quarter. We issued the SBLF, and our finance team got through recently an S3 on that. We've prepared for working with the great people at Gateway and Beach for the S4, which went effective, and that's actually one of the reasons why we're having the call a little bit later this month, so we could get through that cycle, but I think we're making great progress on the Beach acquisition. Again, I'm very pleased with what we've done from an asset quality perspective and from a production perspective on both the loan and the deposit side. So I'm generally quite pleased with the quarter. Certainly would like to have had everything coming in alignment from an OREO expense and other things so that we could have generated even higher levels of earnings, but I think it's important to be honest and recognize some of those legacy costs and clear them. And I think that the organization will benefit greatly from the actions that we've taken this quarter and beyond. So I remain optimistic about our future as an organic grower, and I remain optimistic about our future as we continue to become the consolidator of choice here in Southern California. And as always, I'm very appreciative to our shareholders for the trust they've placed in us and for the analysts that cover PacTrust and make us better. So thank you all for your interest. And with no further questions, we will close the call.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.